And now, Kathleen Stevenson's guest is Reverend Dr. Barbara Rossing, author of The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelation.
I'm speaking with Barbara Rossing, who teaches New Testament at the Lutheran School of Theology at Chicago. She is an ordained Lutheran minister, and she received her doctorate at Harvard University Divinity School. She's the author of the book, The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelations. On Saturday, this Saturday, Dr. Rossing will be speaking four times on various topics related to the rapture. That's from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church, which is located at 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue. And on Sunday morning at 9 a.m., she will be leading a forum on this topic. The lecture series is free and open to the public. Lunch and childcare are available by registration, and pre-registration is requested by email or by phone. For information, you can go to Central Lutheran's website at www.centralportland.org. Barbara Rossing, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Now, how did you come to write The Rapture Exposed? How did you get interested in this particular aspect of the topic?
Well, that's a great question. I'm a biblical scholar, and I did my academic work at Harvard on the Book of Revelation. But as I went out speaking in churches and in other settings, more and more people were asking me about the so-called rapture and this whole theology of the Left Behind novels, which I didn't know much about, but as I found out more about it, I became so alarmed at it that I decided that I wanted to write a response, a critique of this kind of theology. So it was sort of from popular exposure and then beginning to learn something about the theology that I found it alarming enough that I think it does need a response.
You begin your book with the sentence, "The rapture is a racket."
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think in two ways. The rapture is a racket theologically because I think it's used to scare people and to give them a very problematic view of God. As I've talked on various radio interviews and with my own students in class, people who grew up with this kind of notion lived in constant fear. For example, a 10-year-old child came home from school and his mother wasn't there, and his first thought was, she's been raptured without me and I've been left behind. So it puts into children and others this kind of fear that God is going to take some and leave others, and that I constantly need to worry about that. And I think that's a very problematic kind of theology. And the second thing would be, I think it's a political racket right now in our culture, the whole notion that God is planning to destroy the earth after having snatched born-again Christians up to heaven, that God's plan for the world is a series of ever-worsening disasters, including earthquakes and plagues, and that somehow Jesus needs all this to happen in order to be able to return to earth, that he has a sequence of events planned in the Middle East, for example, that follow a particular political script that includes war and violence. I think this is a very problematic politics that it's fostering in our culture. So I view that as a racket as well.
Maybe we could talk a minute about the whole idea of the rapture and where it came from. Is that word actually used in Revelation? What is the basis for this idea?
It's not used anywhere in the Bible. So it's an invention. I would say it came about in the 19th century as the result of the work of a British pastor named John Nelson Darby, who took the notion of Christ's second coming, which all Christians traditionally do believe, and certainly I do, my own denomination does, the Lutheran Church, but Darby split that second coming into two parts and argued that first Christ would come and hover above the earth and suck people out of their houses and take them back up to heaven for 7 years. And then after those 7 years, during which time God was going to inflict terrible tribulation on the earth, then Christ would return for a second coming. So the rapture notion is less than 200 years old. It's a fairly recent invention, and I don't think that it's in the Bible at all. Certainly the word rapture isn't in the Bible. They can piece it together by picking out various Bible verses here and there, a verse from Paul's epistle to the Thessalonians, a verse from the Gospels, and then they insert it into the book of Revelation. But the rapture itself is never laid out in the Bible.
When it was first developed, was it popular? Or what's the sort of the history of the idea between that time in the 1830s and now?
Well, that's an interesting history in both Britain and the United States. There was certainly a lot of interest in prophecy and end times things before Darby and through the 1800s, but it became this particular version of it, the so-called rapture followed by the 7 years, followed by the second coming, was popularized when Darby made several trips to the United States and mission conferences. And then in the late 1900s, a series of prophecy conferences among evangelicals, although it was by no means embraced by the majority of evangelicals, but it really got popularized when Oxford University Press published what's called the Scofield Reference Bible, which was the King James Bible with notes authored by a guy named Cyrus Scofield to follow this particular script. So it interpreted all the events of the Bible in this light. And that sold millions. So many Americans in the early 1900s learned their Bible through the Scofield Reference Bible and came to think this is what the Bible says, although, in my view, it's not.
And in present-day culture, in our own time, what has accounted for the popularity of this idea?
Well, several things. I would say in the 1970s, Hal Lindsey published his book, The Late Great Planet Earth. And that sold, I think, 30 million copies. So that was the first to make this idea that there's a particular political set of events that God mandates as part of the end of the world. And then now in the 90s and subsequent years, Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins published a fictionalized version of basically the same script that Hal Lindsey had followed called the Left Behind novels. And the right-wing fundamentalists were very active politically, the Christian Coalition and others, promoting this version of U.S. politics and this view of the end times. So it was sort of a constellation of factors, but it certainly has been catapulted by this series of novels, the Left Behind novels.
Can you talk about the Left Behind novels, sort of what they're like and what their main purpose is, in your opinion?
Well, they're highly entertaining and very popular among Americans. In my view, the purpose is to deliver a particular kind of theology or maybe even a particular politics, but it's in the cast of fiction. So, and people can relate to these characters. They're fun, they're fast-paced, they're thrillers. There's a great deal of violence in them, and they purport to tell the story of the end of the world. The events that supposedly will happen on Earth in the United States and in the Middle East between the time of the so-called rapture and Christ's second coming. So during that seven-year period of tribulation, these novels give us the escapades and events supposedly laid out in the book of Revelation predicting plagues and other disasters. So they're action-packed, but I think we need to remember they're fiction. They're definitely fiction, not only the plot and characters, but also the theology behind them.
Do you know anything about how they're marketed, how people find out about them and know that they're out there and that they're of interest to them?
Well, very effectively marketed. I mean, they've been at bookstores and there's movies made about them, although the movies have been the subject of a great deal of critique as being kind of B-rated movies, but no, they're widely marketed.
And their sales are very, very high, aren't they, in comparison to the average bestseller?
Yeah, I think that's the case. I haven't studied the sales figures a lot. I'm certainly trying to promote a different view, but yeah, these novels are very popular, and I think the important thing is for mainline Christians to speak out and say this may be fun theology and fun plot lines, but this is not the view of the Bible. This is not God's message for our world.
Talk a little bit more about what are the views within the books, besides explaining the rapture or giving examples of how the rapture comes. What else do these books have in their vision?
Well, they would argue that the book of Revelation and the book of Daniel in the Bible lay out in advance God's playbook for the end of the world, or God's script, that it's, that prophecy means history predicted in advance. And I would certainly argue that's not what Bible prophecy means. God does not give us the script with every detail, every violent detail in advance. But they say then that the plagues of Revelation are all things that God wills to have happen on the earth, including World War III, the Battle of Armageddon, the killing of three-quarters of the world's population. It's a very alarming kind of theology. It's also absolutist. It structures a kind of us versus them sort of mentality, so that the true born-again Christians are battling everybody else, battling the Antichrist, and they set up an underground bunker. And I think it's a distortion of the Bible, which proclaims that God created the world and God will never leave this world behind.
The role of the environment in these novels, is it prominent?
Well, it's prominent as the location of a great deal of disaster, and that's one aspect of these novels and of this theology that I think is very problematic, is that planet Earth gets destroyed. And it does, I think, promote a mentality that if the world only has to last seven more years before it's completely blown up, then we maybe don't have to care for it. So I think the environmental implications are very problematic. The characters in these novels drive Hummers and carry guns, and there's a great deal of terrible events that happen to the ecology, to the earth. So it's not a kind of view of care for God's creation at all.
Is it all fundamentalists that follow this particular line of thought, or is this a specific group of fundamentalist Christians that believe in this idea?
No, it's by no means all fundamentalists. In fact, this theology is critiqued by many evangelicals as well. Number of churches, including evangelical churches, have come out against it, but it's sort of made its way up through popular culture. So I think the job of many of us pastors and others is to help people see this is not traditional theology at all. It's a distortion, and it's not traditional evangelical theology either, and there are many voices saying that.
President Bush, what's your feeling about what he believes as far as this goes?
Well, I don't know, and I don't think anybody does. He's a United Methodist and attends an Episcopal church, is my understanding, and certainly neither of those two churches would promote this theology at all. On the other hand, many Republicans in Congress do seem to follow this idea that somehow events in the Middle East need to follow a particular script or whatever, and I hope that President Bush is not in that camp. To the extent that he supports longtime American policy, which is a two-state solution in the Middle East, one for Israel, one for Palestine, to the extent that he seeks peace in the Middle East, that would indicate that he doesn't follow this kind of theology, because the promoters of rapture theology don't want peace in the Middle East. They want war. So I sincerely hope that President Bush does not buy into this kind of left-behind theology.
Why don't you think they would have some kind of message of peace in their interpretation of this whole line of thought? Why is it so important that there's war and not peace?
They use a particular Bible passage in the book of Daniel, in the 9th chapter, verse 27, to argue that in the end times, which they think we're living in the end times, it's the Antichrist who makes peace treaties. And so peace treaties in the Middle East, in their view, are a sign of the work of the Antichrist. I mean, it's a complete reversal of traditional Christian theology and the message of Jesus, you know, where he says in the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the peacemakers." Somehow, this theology has distorted the Bible to think that the way you see God's presence in the world most vividly is through war and the red horse of the apocalypse and Armageddon. But that's not traditional Christian theology, and I do think we need to speak out against it and lift up the gospel's message of peace.
I'm speaking with Barbara Rossing. She is the author of The Rapture Exposed, and she will be speaking in Portland this weekend, this Saturday, in a series of lectures, and also Sunday morning, and we'll repeat those specifics on those talks at the end of this interview. Maybe now, Barbara, we could have you talk a little bit about how you do counter the message in these novels and in this line of thought regarding the rapture. How do you interpret the book of Revelation, and what do you think the message is in that book?
Well, the subtitle of my book is The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelation. It's The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope. And I do think that the message of the Bible, the whole Bible, is a message of hope. And even in the Book of Revelation, I think, especially if you look at the final chapters of the book, it's God's dream for our world. It's a vision of hope for our world that's very much centered on the earth. It's a vision of life. Where everyone has access to the creation that God has given us. And certainly it's a future vision that is about heaven, but it's about more than that. So I think that needs to direct our reading of Revelation. And that the main character of Revelation is Jesus, who is presented not as this warmongering Jesus, but as the nonviolent Lamb who conquers over evil not by killing people, but by giving his life, and then invites us to follow him in a way of life that I call Lamb power, which would be nonviolent, and it would be loving and life-giving. So I think if you take Jesus as a central character of Revelation, and if you follow the message of Jesus through the book, and certainly in the whole Bible, that the heart of the message of this book is one of love and of hope for our world, not death and destruction.
Do you think there is a message in the book that is, I don't know, for lack of a better term, anti-empire?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's why Revelation is such an important book. It was written in the first century during the Roman Empire, during a particularly violent time. It's a voice from the margins or from the underside offering a very daring critique of Roman imperial injustice, economic injustice, militarism. Even classic scholars agree that Revelation is one of the boldest critiques of Rome's imperial injustices that was ever written in the ancient world. So I think we need that critique today. I think that anti-imperial vision, our counter-imperial vision, and the critique of empire can really speak to our situation today, and that it's always through history spoken to marginalized people especially, and that's an important voice of protest and resistance. So that's what I think we need to recover again in this wonderful book, is the hope that's a kind of counter-imperial hope.
The liberation theologists, have they ever referred to this train of thought in Revelation? Is this something that liberation theologists can use in their work?
Absolutely. Revelation was important, for example, in South Africa in the 1980s, 70s and 80s in the struggle against apartheid. A pastor named Alan Bozak wrote a commentary on Revelation using the songs of Revelation, the visions of hope, as a way to motivate people to see hope in the midst of what looked like a pretty hopeless situation. Similarly, in Latin America, the 1980s and 90s have been a time when many impoverished people have seen in Revelation a vision of a different kind of world that doesn't make such a distinction between rich and poor and that keeps hope alive. And certainly in our own country, the African American spirituals draw largely on the imagery of the book of Revelation. It's been the major source of art and music, especially for people seeking a vision of hope. It's the place that we go to find renewal of our hopes and dreams for the world and the promises of God.
Do you see the book of Revelation as relating at all to the situation in the Middle East?
Yes, although I don't think it prophesies something that has to happen in the Middle East. So I guess what I would mainly do is critique the ways that others use it as somehow thinking that a particular script of wars has to happen. I don't think that we can look to the Bible to find predictions of the end of the world and of what's supposed to happen in the Middle East or anywhere. But that being said, I think the vision of New Jerusalem at the end of the book, which is a vision of a multi-ethnic city whose gates are open to all nations, is an important vision for every city and for every time, and that would include for Jerusalem today. So I think it helps us critique unilateral moves for Israel to take over all the land, or if there's any idea in the Bible that some would claim that Palestinians should be expelled from their land. I think Revelation offers a critique of that and says, no, God's vision for Portland or for Jerusalem or for anywhere is of multi-ethnic groups living together in peace. And I think that gives us an important vision for the Middle East.
Can you talk a little bit about your idea of the rapture in reverse?
Ah, yes, I coined that term. Well, if anything, at the end of the book of Revelation, there's not a rapture. There's no rapture in Revelation. There's never a time when people get snatched off the earth. But if anything, at the end of the book of Revelation, it's a vision of God coming down from heaven to earth. And it's the very opposite of rapture. And I think this is the message of Jesus' incarnation that we see in the Gospels as well, that God so loves the world that God comes to dwell with us here on this earth. And so it's made very clear in the 21st chapter of Revelation. It says, I saw a holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven. And then in the 22nd chapter, it's spelled out even more that God's throne comes to be in the midst of this amazing city. A river of life flows through it, the tree of life on both sides of it. It's a wonderful vision of God's dwelling with us on earth. And I think it can be a vision of renewal for all of our cities and all of our communities. So it's not an escapist vision of trying to get raptured up to heaven, but it's the very opposite. It's God coming to be with us on earth.
What do you see as the role of Christians or people of faith who disagree with the view that we've been talking about, the view that the rapture will happen, or the view that's put out in the Left Behind novels? What do you see as what they're supposed to do to counteract that, if anything?
Oh, I definitely think we need to counteract it. And I would say not just Christians, but all people of faith, Christians, Jews, Muslims. I use the work of an Israeli Jewish scholar named Gershom Gorenberg, who wrote a book. It's called The End of Days, and he writes about the struggle for the Temple Mount in Jerusalem and how fundamentalists of all of our traditions are trying to lay claim to our traditions. But he suggests, and I agree with him, that we all need to speak out against this fundamentalist extremist turn in our various religions and say this is not the heart of biblical tradition or of Islamic tradition. Certainly, fundamentalists are trying to claim the center. They're trying to claim the turf and lay claim to our traditions. But I think we all need to speak out now and say that while you can piece together Bible verses that will say what the fundamentalists want them to say, that's not the main message of the Bible. So I think we very much need to speak out in opposition to fundamentalist interpretations right now. I just read Jimmy Carter's new book, for example, and he says he thinks fundamentalism is the greatest danger right now, and I would agree. So I think all of us who are people of faith need to articulate that in terms other than those that fundamentalisms seek to lay claim to.
Do you think it's true that the fundamentalist wing of Christianity is the area where there is much more growth and energy and activity as opposed to the more traditional aspects of the Christian religion?
Mainline.
Do you think it's true that the mainline Christian groups are not having as much impact these days? And if so, what can be done?
That's an important question. I'm not a historian enough to know the exact demographics, but certainly fundamentalism is growing. I think mainline churches, also my own Lutheran church, is growing. But we all need to speak out more and be more bold in our testimony of how we see God at work in the world differently from the fundamentalist vision. I think we really need to work on this one. I use the work of a Republican senator, former Senator John Danforth of Missouri, who came out with some op-ed pieces last year called Onward, Moderate Christian Soldiers. I mean, so it's not just a sort of left-wing vision at all. It's mainline Christianity. Danforth is an Episcopal priest, and he expresses alarm at how fundamentalism is claiming to be the Christian message. So, while fundamentalist churches might be growing, I think it just should motivate all the rest of us to be more bold, more articulate in saying how we see God at work in the world and how we see the message of the gospel as a message of God's love for the world.
Barbara Rossing, we're almost at the end of this interview. Is there anything that you think we should mention that we haven't talked about or something that you really want to stress in your message?
Yes, I just wanted to say I'm looking forward to coming to the Pacific Northwest. I actually wrote the book in the Cascade Mountains in Wenatchee, Washington, and I think that the environment of the Pacific Northwest is a wonderful place to think about things like God's love for the world, the beauty of the creation, and how we can make connections between the imagery of the Bible, the river of life, the tree of life, in the landscape around us. So that's what the Pacific Northwest always does for me, and I'm very much looking forward to coming to Portland.
Barbara Rossing, I want to thank you very much for speaking with us today, and I want to tell people again that you will be speaking in Portland this weekend. That's February 11th and 12th, and it's through the Central Lutheran Church. And let's tell people again the times and the details on that. On Saturday, February 11th, from 9 to 4:30 p.m., Dr. Rossing will speak four times. The lecture series is free and open to the public, and I believe that you can go to one of those, or you can pick and choose from the programs that day. Lunch and childcare are available by advance registration, and you can go to the website www.centralportland.org to get more information on that. There's also a phone number here, 503-284-2331. And Sunday's program includes a 9 a.m. forum that Reverend Dr. Rossing will be giving. So, again, thank you very much, Dr. Rossing.
Thank you.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for KABU.
We have one copy of the book featured in this last interview, The Rapture Exposed, The Message of Hope in the Book of Revelation. If you would like this copy, you must not have won anything from KABU within the last 30 days, and you must be able to pick up the tickets at the station sometime between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. To win, be the first caller to phone 503-231-8032. 503-231-8032.